You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and today's episode is with Alex Leahy. It brings me a lot of joy welcoming her back onto the podcast. This talk takes place a little bit over a year since our first talk. You could go listen to that after this one. And this time we're delving deeply into her second album, The Best of Luck Club. The songs off this album prove that Leahy still has so much left to share, both sharpening her toolkit as both a storyteller and a musician. On this episode, we chat about a shared love of dive bars, working with Catherine Marx, and unexpectedly finding herself in Nashville. This is the 405 Exchange with Alex Leahy. Enjoy. So it's been just a little bit over a year since we last talked. Obviously, we have a lot of new stuff to talk about. But before we jump into all that, how are you?
Hi. Yeah. Thanks for asking. It's not that often that you get asked how you are sometimes. So I really appreciate it. But I'm good. I'm very happy. Excited to be here. It's so nice to be here during the summer. And yeah, back in New York, it's always so surreal. Like when you play a show in New York, you know. It's always such a treat, and yeah, I feel very lucky and yeah, excited to be here.
What's incredibly cool too is that this time the room is bigger as well, and it's just like, I feel like this is one of those times where like on a Friday night in August, you can't think of a better time to be playing a show, really.
Totally, yeah. I'm super excited. Like this venue is so beautiful, and like it's just kind of got a vibe about it without even having anyone in it, so yeah. It's great, and I think it's a lot of my band's first time playing here as well, so yeah. That makes it more exciting, and yeah, it's going to be a really good one.
Yeah, and this is almost like an entirely new band that you have with you on this go-around, right?
Yeah, I've got some new people playing with me, which is really exciting, like, more just because, like, as a musician, it's just exciting to play with new people, so it's a bonus that I love hanging out with them all, and we're all good mates, but yeah, it's a really fun show, and it's going to be great fun to all play together.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask more about the band later, but before I do, I kind of want to go in a little bit deeper about just how life has changed for you, because what's really interesting is, like, you know, what I really loved about the talk we did last time is I got to catch you near the tail end of you doing the first campaign for the album, which is, like, when you experience that, you're having so many of your first in a lot of ways.
Totally.
To come to the end of that and know that life goes on. I mean, obviously it does, but to actually have lived it, like, what was that like for you? To come off tour and actually have your head on and all that.
It was great. Like, it was definitely a case of, like, coming off the road and being like, you know, I will eventually feel excited about doing this again. Like, because you are doing it for so long, it does get to a stage where you're like, all right, I just need, like, a minute. But it didn't take long for me to get really psyched about picking it back up. And when it did come time to come back on tour, like, a few months later, I was, like, ready to go.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, like, something that, you know, you need to allow the ebb and flow of that kind of stuff to keep excited about it. And I think, you know, with a job like being an artist and, you know, especially a touring artist, if you're not excited about what you do, then like you probably shouldn't be doing it, because at the best of times it's a lot of hard work, you know? So yeah. It's like, as long as you're always having fun or able to find the fun in it, then like you're doing okay. And that's almost like the only thing that you can rely on and also depend on yourself for. So yeah, I'm so stoked to be back on the road, and it's been awesome, like, in the time between when we last saw each other and now, like, to go off and you know, write a record and record it, and I feel like I'm going into that phase again, like, even though it's like pretty soon after this record's come out, but you know, it was written all that time ago now, so I'm ready to get back into it, and I'm really excited for it.
That's really sick. I guess that speaks a lot to just like the creative energy that you have, like, going on still, like, kind of like the retention, but also the evolution of that you had from making this new album.
Totally. Like, I think that, like, at the end of finishing my first record, like, the feeling that I had was, I can't wait to make the next one. And, like, the feeling that I had after making the second record is, I can't wait to make the next one. And I think that, like, is best case scenario. Like, when you come out of any sort of, like, project or process and you can't wait to do it again, like, that's obviously a sign that you had a, you know, really good time doing that particular one, and hopefully that it turns out to be, you know, that is something that you connect with for at least a while, and hopefully that other people connect with for even longer.
Yeah. I know this might even sound like a bit of a silly question, but like something that is really clear about you to me, and I think anyone who's into you and your music, is that I love so much the fact that you talk so forwardly and poignantly about how it's work. Like, what you do is work, it's a job. And that leads me to wonder, like, during that time, did you have time to relax at all?
Well, I mean, like, yeah, I did. Like, I definitely took advantage of being in my situation. Like, you know, at the end of tour, I was, you know, in America, and I didn't really have much on afterwards, and I was like, stop, I'm gonna stay. Like, you know, I'm gonna stay for a bit. I'm gonna do a bit of travel. I'm gonna see some shit. I'm gonna go to Europe. Like, yeah, like, I definitely maximize the opportunity of being away from home and, like, you know, being a tourist for a bit and exploring, you know, and doing those sorts of things. So it's important to have a balance, but it's also, like, to me, like, I mean, it is work, but I also love my job. So, like,
yeah.
It's, yeah, I feel, like, a great sense of responsibility to what I do, because I want to do it forever, you know, like, it's a responsibility to myself as well. Like, if this was all to come crumbling down, or if my, you know, if this like job was taken away from me, like, I would be devastated. So, like, I want to make sure that I make the effort and put in the time and take the responsibility to make sure that, like, I can keep doing it forever, because that's what makes me happy.
Yeah, I totally get that. And the way you described that there about being taken away from you, if that was to ever happen, I mean, I don't even know how that would happen, but if it ever did, it would be such a different type of crushing, because it's like, essentially your art is a reflection of you, and that's what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is that it could happen. Like, you know, like, it's like, that's the thing about it. Like, and it's really scary, but it's also an impetus to just, like, keep trying your best and, like, doing your own thing as well. So that's kind of the way that I look at it. And I suppose it sounds a bit morbid, but, like,
it does, actually.
It sounds like super morbid, but there's also something kind of romantic about it as well. So it's kind of nice to get lost in just, like, being in the moment too, and, like, letting it take you wherever it takes you.
I would definitely agree with that. One of the big reasons we're here to talk is because you released a new record called The Best of Luck Club. I'm so glad I got that right on the first go. And something that I was really excited about reading about the album before I heard it was how it was partially inspired by your experience in dive bars in America, particularly in Nashville, if I remember correctly. When I read that, I felt like, even before I read more about it, I instantly understood what you connected with and found loving with those type
of
environments.
Yeah.
But I'd love to hear it in your own words to see if I'm right at all, because for me, particularly, dive bars here in New York and other states and cities, I love the fact that they're places you could go. They're completely unpretentious, and it almost sounds strange saying this in 2019, but they're almost like a nice equalizer in terms of humanity.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think you just, like, hit the nail on the head. Like, something that, like, I really try to encourage, like, you know, with being an artist and kind of, like, having, you know, that kind of platform, I suppose, is to, you know, really encourage inclusivity and, like, letting everyone know that they have a place. And even if it is just that one of my shows, like, there is a place for everyone. And I feel like with dive bars, like, it's the same kind of thing. Like, everyone has a place there. Like, there's no dress code. Like, they're open until all hours. Like, you know, at a really good dive bar, you can get, you know, fucking $1 PBRs and then also, like, high end whiskey, like, you know, like, in a plastic cup. Like, you know, like, I feel like those sort of things and those, like, you know, like, those pictures, like, even just the image of, like, you know, a $50 glass of whiskey in a plastic cup in itself is really, like, reflective of, like, those sort of environments, and I think that's great. So for me, like, going to some of the dive bars in Nashville, which is where I was writing the record when it all kind of came to me, was that, it was sort of these, like, doors that you could open, but you had to find it in the first place. Like, no one's gonna, like, have the neon sign or the arrow, like, pointing you in. It's like, you have to find the door and you have to let yourself in. But once you do that for yourself, like, you are met with people who are, you know, who have taken the same kind of path. And I think that that's, like, really cool, and it makes people feel less alone, in a world where, you know, we can feel really isolated or get, like, way too involved in ourselves. And at the same time, like, it encourages us to be empathetic, because we're all not that different, really. You know, we all experience, like, a very similar spectrum of emotions and feelings and ultimately experiences. And it's important to understand where everyone's come from and where everyone's going and how important it is to look out for one another. So, yeah, and I felt that that was really, like, you know, a part of the philosophy in those dive bars, and I really wanted to bring that into this record because although all the songs are about my own experiences, like, they're not that different from most other people's, and, like,
yeah.
And it just shows how important it is that we all understand each other and at least make an effort to, yeah, to empathize.
I really love everything you said there, and particularly in regards to Nashville. That's a city that means so much to me, with being fortunate having to go there over the years for work stuff. And I think something that's interesting with a place like Nashville at a time like now, from the outside, it would seem like a very complicated place where you have this predominantly, do you know the term, like, blue and red state?
Yeah. What do they call it? It's like the blueberry in the tomato soup or something like that.
So what I think is very beautiful about Nashville is that people have that as its descriptor, and from the outside they kind of think, like, how does that exist? But when you're in Nashville, it's not so much a very singular ideology. It's a lot of coexisting. And when you go into these environments like dive bars and even more high-end places, I'm doing, like, air quotes, it's like, it is a reminder that we could all coexist and how important it is to try.
Well, we do coexist. That's the thing. And I feel like there have been so many, like, barriers put up between all of us, like, whether it's literal walls or, like, you know, a matter of, like, or even if it is, like, hitting private on your Instagram account, like, these barriers between all of us that, like, you know, it makes it feel like we don't coexist, or there is some sort of exclusivity in certain circles or parts of, like, you know, society and people. And, you know, like, I don't, you know, what's the joy in that? And, like, even in doing that, you kind of, like, silo yourself from what's actually happening in the world. You know, and that's how bad things happen. So, you know, on a greater scale. So it's just, like, I feel like it's about this using the everyday scenario as a way to influence the bigger picture. Like, that's kind of what that's about, for sure.
Yeah. And was it always, like, I don't want to say the word plan, but, like, what do you think was that led you to Nashville, or, like, led you to wanting to be there for as long as you were?
Because it was a cliche. Like, I wanted to go and write songs in Nashville. It's like, that's what people fucking do. Like, you know, I had this time off. I had to write this record. You know, I had all these ideas, and I'm like, where would I go and do it? I'm like, I'm gonna do it in Nashville, because that's what people do in Nashville. They write records. Like, and it wasn't like a particularly, like, you know, quintessential Nashville experience. Like, I just happened to be in Nashville, and someone gave me quite literally, like, a room to write in, with, like, a desk and a chair, and I just, like, locked myself in there for a week and just treated it like a 9 to 5 or, you know, 9 to 9 at times, like, job, and just, like, yeah, just sat there and just churned out songs. And luckily there were songs, because I would have been stuffed if there wasn't. And and that's sort of, like, what led me there. Yeah, but, you know, it was just a timing thing, really, and a timing and opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah, that's Vega. So I want to start asking about the songs. I love how the album starts with "I don't get invited to parties anymore," and that's a very poignant title, especially because I only turned 29 like a couple weeks ago. So
yeah,
that's a very appropriately titled song. What really stuck out to me is, like, I love the fact that the guitars on this song, the barrage of them, it's quite disorienting.
Yeah, right.
Like, it has a feeling like that. And I love how it really fits with the theme of the lyrics. What was it like to work on this one?
It was great. That song was one that I sort of had, like, the story and the, like, the skeleton of it. I wrote it on, like, a tour bus that we were on. And then a few weeks later, I went to Nashville and, like, really fleshed it out. And I kind of knew how I wanted it to kind of have that, like, I suppose, like, the false starts, like, you know, how it kind of is really quiet and really loud and then really quiet and really loud. And, like, I wanted to sort of find that dynamic, like, the actual dynamics in the song. And it kind of got to a point where I was like the song was there, and I kind of think of the song as a song in two parts. And I, like, the song was there, and the first part was done, the second part was there, but I didn't know how to kind of tie it together. And so when I went into the studio with Catherine Marks, who co-produced a record with me, I was like, it was one of the first songs that we looked at, and I was like, I don't quite know how to, like, how to cast it off, you know, like, I don't quite know how to get it off the needles. and to use a knitting reference in rock and roll, but like I don't quite know how to like let it be. And she was really instrumental in helping me do that, and was kind of able, because it was such a busy song, and it was kind of able to pull things that were already there and kind of like scoop them out and like help like disperse them throughout, so it was able to kind of be tied together. Yeah. And that's why she's so good at her job.
Yeah. Yeah, was that one of those things where like, I mean, obviously I imagine you worked with producers before and you've seen other people do it, but when you had the experience with Catherine, was it like one of those moments where you're like, oh wow, this is like what a creative partnership could be like?
Totally. Like, I think with Catherine, like the thing that led me to her was the fact that I was just a fan of a bunch of records that she happened to have worked on. And so I was like, I reckon, you know, she would happen to be in Melbourne when I was there last year, because that's where she's originally from, even though she's based in London. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And we met up for coffee, and I just like point blank said to her, I was like, I'm a huge fan. Like, I think we could make a great record together.
Yeah.
I don't even think, I was like, I know we can make a great record together. Like, we should do it. And she was like, sure. Like, you know, so it was like kind of like, it wasn't like this sort of like, like umming and ahhing about it or like beating around the bush. It was like, we should do this. And she was down for it, and we did it. And it was, yeah, so much fun. And she's just an amazing person to work with, and we have a very similar way of communicating. We're both extremely direct, and we're both very dry. So there were a lot of laughs and a lot of like, you know, yelling "fuck you" through the like silent glass in the like live room to the thing, but then laughing about it, and like, yeah, we kind of just like jabbed at each other for 4 weeks and had a lot of fun and made this record.
That's amazing when it works out that way, because obviously it's like, you hope for that, but then to know it actually comes across as like working so well in real time, like, it's a beautiful thing.
It's awesome. Yeah. And Catherine's like, I mean, like, we've become wonderful friends through the process, and I like to think of her as a, you know, as a mentor, but it's also cool that she asks me questions about things as well. Like, she doesn't have the ego to think that she knows everything, and because no one does. And yeah, she's just like such a beautiful person, and I just love how we get to ask questions, you know, like it's sort of like a beautiful relationship where we sort of both are asking questions instead of both trying to answer things, you know, like, which makes for more exploring.
Yeah,
which is cool.
That's rare in life.
Yeah so it's yeah, I've learned so much from Catherine, and I feel like we made one of many records that we could have made together, and I can't wait to make another with her. Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
I love Am I Doing It Right. It feels like very much a natural evolution from what we heard on the first album. I wonder though, what was it that felt different about making this one for you?
I mean, I had the luxury this time to make it all at once. With the first record, because of where I was at in my career, like, I had to be playing shows as we were making the record. So the actual like recording process was quite fragmented in a way, which was kind of cool, because I mean, you had like breaks and that sort of thing. But at the same time, I sort of said at the end of that record, you know, making that record, I was like, you know, next time I would love to be in a position where I can just have like full immersion. Yeah. And that's essentially what I was able to do with this current one. And yeah, it was, you know, made in a totally different way. Like, I, you know, was far more hands-on with the production of the record. You know, I had learned a lot, and sort of like developed a lot of skills between records, especially in terms of like creating like really full demos and being able to do a bit of engineering as well, and like recording vocals and that kind of thing, and kind of incorporating that into my writing process was something that was like quite different. And then also, like, I mean, I suppose the biggest difference between the records is that like the first record was a lot of my band at the time playing on it, whereas this one, you know, Catherine and I just decided, like, it's like, let's just use the bulk of the demos and I can play everything else that isn't on there. And we'll get Lockie, who drummed on the first record as well, to come and play drums. And then we'll just do the rest ourselves. So it was like, it was very like, you know, it's kind of funny that you were saying about like parties, like the disorientingness of it. You'd think it might be like a whole lot of like ants or something just like scurrying in different directions, but it's actually just me kind of like, you know, like going side to side like a basketball like defense dude or something like that. Like, it's almost like smoke and mirrors, you know, that it's just pretty much one person just doing everything, but orchestrated in a way that it seems like something far more live.
That is really mad, because of listening to the record, for people who haven't listened to it yet, it does sound not just like a full-on band effort, but it sounds like there's like 6 or 7 people at once.
Yeah, it's not. It's just me, like, literally, like, making my fingers bleed, like, on the guitar, and, like, getting blisters and, like, exhausting myself. But, like, yeah, just doing take after take, and Catherine being the exceptional engineer that she is, making it sit in a place where it's effectively like an illusion. And she's so good at creating that energy and that vibe, even when it's, you know, not actually happening, so to speak. Yeah.
Well, hats off to you. And, you know, with the techniques you were talking about with vocals and engineering as well, like, you know, evolving that, I felt like I heard that a lot on Unspoken History, because this song is a very different song in regards to, I feel like, what most people would expect to hear from you. At least in regards to people who are familiar with your music. And it really is something different. Where did this come from?
Yeah, that song was an interesting one. It kind of came from... It really surprised me how that song came out. You know, I said I went to Nashville and I kind of was, like, fleshing out a bunch of ideas I'd been pulling from my time on the road. And I went into the room that I was working in one day with nothing. You know, I didn't have any ideas. I had no idea what I was going to do. But my girlfriend lent me her acoustic guitar, which is like tuned in this variation of open D. And I don't really play in any other variation other than standard tuning. But so I had this guitar, which I effectively didn't know how to play. And she just gave it to me. She was like, just see what happens. She was like, try and find some chords and like see what happens. And I was like, I don't do this. And so I like sat with this guitar on the couch of this room for a few hours and like tried to sort of like find voicings and like shapes that I really liked on this tuning. And then this song just like came out of me in like, you know, after sitting there for 2.5 hours, like in 40 minutes after that, I had an entire song. And it's kind of weird when those sort of moments happen, you know, it's like something is just like given to you and then you just like spills out of you and you're almost like a vessel, you know, like, and it just like happens. And I remember like demoing it and, you know, it's obviously like it's a ballad. And I demoed it and I played it and, you know, my girlfriend came over like at the end of the day and I was like, listen to this. This is kind of weird. And she like listened to it and she was like, I don't think you should do anything else with it. She's like, shut down the session. Just like leave it. And it was one of those things that I went to Catherine with and I was like, here's like a very basic version of this song. And I don't really want to do too much with it. And I'm really glad that I had the advice to kind of leave it as it was, because it now encompasses a very like special space within the record. And it was, yeah, it was a cool thing to do. And it was just like such an organic process, like the actual writing of the song.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was really nice.
Did your girlfriend know like that the guitar she loaned you acted as kind of like the catalyst for that song?
Totally. Yeah. I was like, this would have never have happened like in like with any other instrument, like, and I do feel that like there's weird juju with instruments, and especially with guitars, like when you ride on them, like there, I think there's a different song in every guitar, and for me, like, that happened to be hopefully just one of, you know, one of them on this particular guitar. And yeah, it was just like a very fortuitous kind of thing, that, you know, my brain was at a point where I was able to kind of take this instrument and this new way of playing and put it into, you know, song.
Yeah. It is really amazing how it's sequenced on the record, because I don't want to say the word reprieve, but it does give like the listener a bit of a breather in regards to like where it's placed on the record.
Yeah. I think Catherine and I have said that like this record is quite maximalist, and like, yes, I think that like, is. I think that, yeah, this song is very much like, yeah, a little bit of a breather, like among all of that, yeah, energy and like, quite frankly, like density. Yeah.
I would definitely agree with that. So my favorite song off the album. It's always funny when you could say a single is your favorite song, but it has grown to become that, and it's Don't Be So Hard on Yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, I generally love the song, for what it is, but I also just love any song that somehow has a Mighty Ducks reference in it.
Yes.
That is really amazing.
A very subtle but present Mighty Ducks reference. Well, not so subtle, it's in every chorus, but yeah.
Oh, I love that so much, and the sax bit in that song is mega. I guess my only question with this one is, like, did you have a constant smile on your face while you were making it?
Yeah, I mean, like, definitely during the sax solo part, like, that was sort of, like, kind of, like, Catherine and I fucking around, but then, like, we sort of, like, had tracked the sax solo, and we were like, I don't know what people would think of it, and then we, like, sort of sent it to a couple of people, and, like, the, like, consensus, like, the unwavering consensus was for the sax solo to stay. And we were kind of like, oh shit. Well, she thought it was hilarious. She was like, this is definitely like one of the more perverse things that's happened in my career. And I was like, and my response was like, now I'm gonna have to fucking play this until I, like, you know, I'm gonna have to like relearn the saxophone. And she thought it was so funny. I'm like, this is like a part of my life now, like I'm stuck with this. But it's pretty funny, and it's like, it's more than anything just hilarious to see how people respond when the saxophone comes out on stage at gigs. Like,
yeah,
it's great.
Where is it? I mean, this talk will be coming out a couple weeks after the tour, so it's not really much of a spoiler.
Yeah.
But like, where is it placed in the set? The song, is it like middle end or?
Well, we've been doing it. It's towards the end for sure, and we've been doing like on this tour, we've kind of like just been playing the encore in the set. So.
Yeah.
Generally, it would be like the last song of the set, and then we'd do an encore. But on this tour, we've kind of been like, no, let's just like power through, like have fun,
yeah.
And like don't let the vibe die.
That
and,
kind
yeah.
of demands that.
Yeah, so like it's just been like, yeah, really fun doing it that way. But it's like definitely towards the end. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, it has to be like, you can't start with the sax, you know, and then it not be there for the rest of the show. So yeah.
I only have a couple more questions before I jump into those. I'm just gonna share like a small story that happened quite recently. So I had it in my head from hearing that song a couple months back, like, oh man, I'd love to rewatch Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
Ages. And my girlfriend had never seen it. She's from Britain, and she
yeah.
was like, oh, I've heard this movie, never seen it. So on a random Friday night, similar to this, we ended up watching I showed her the second one, because it's like Team USA
yeah,
and everything.
D2. Yeah,
D2. And halfway through, because it was like, it was a scene where Gordon Bombay and like the Iceland captain are like
yeah,
each other.
Yeah.
She just goes like, this is the most American movie I've ever seen in my entire life.
That's so funny.
Like, she enjoyed it. She was just like, the 90s were a really weird time for America, huh? I was like, yeah, they're
yeah, it's like
time.
Total Recall or something like that. Yeah. It's so funny.
So a lot, you know, one of the things that I really love about how people talk about you and write about you is I feel like you're one of those musicians where it's clear that people do enjoy the music, but they actually pay attention to what you're saying, which sounds like a silly thing to point out, but I think it's great that the fact that you're a storyteller does get attention, like it's the attention it deserves. And I wonder, in regards to this album and the way you approach writing it, how do you feel about your own sense of storytelling? Like, how do you feel like how that's evolved?
I think that I'm less like, oh shit, sorry.
Oh, it's all
right. I think that like I'm less kind of I think I care less about what people might think. Like, I mean, that there was definitely a time not that long ago where I was like, oh, you know, but then people might think that I'm this or that, or like, you know, I feel like I'm less conservative, if that makes sense. Like, as in, like, less conservative about what I'm willing to share about myself.
Yeah.
And maybe, like, I'm still trying to, like, maybe that line will move, like, throughout my life or whatever, or maybe it will keep going in the same direction, or maybe it's just going to stay where it is. But, like, I feel that I'm definitely more open about certain things since starting. And I think that I was quite worried about, like, alienating people, like, from being a part of the audience or anything like that. But to be honest, like, I kind of don't care about that anymore. Like, if, you know, I'm happy to be found by people, and I'm happy to find people, like, you know,
yeah.
to kind of, like, do this with. So, yeah, I think that that's kind of been, like, the biggest shift. Just being more open and more, like, kind of, like, take it or leave it, you know, to be honest, in the messaging. So, yeah, that's where I'm at.
That's really interesting to hear. And, like, I don't mean this in like a disrespectful way at all, but I guess I wouldn't have imagined that you would find yourself in a place feeling that way previously about kind of wondering how people might react to certain things you're saying.
Yeah, like I think it's just sort of owning my own experiences. Like for example, like with the song Interior Demeanor, which is about like going to therapy, like it did occur to me before the song came out that maybe people would be sensitive to me trying to place a narrative on mental health, for example. But when I think about it, I'm sort of like, but this is my experience of it. And it's one of many, you know, and like, so, and we don't have to like box it or silo it all into one experience. It's like, this just happens to be my one.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to hear, and you know, if that encourages someone else to tell everyone, you know, the world about theirs, then that's awesome. You know, like kind of thinking more that way instead of being like, I'm not trying to like get a big like paint roller and, you know, roll it over a particular topic or anything. I'm sort of like more putting like a fleck onto a broader picture of, you know, an issue or a discussion point or something like that.
That's a really good way to put it. And I think something that kind of gets lost in the aspect of like artists and like the way artists exist within our, you know, societies here in the States, I imagine Australia as well, is that it takes so much assurance for a person who is an artist to put themselves out there. I think sometimes people misinterpret that as an artist as saying declarative statements, when rather it's like, no, I'm just sharing my experience with you.
Totally,
it's
yeah.
It's one of many, like you just said.
Yeah, like, and, you know, it's just about, you know, everyone should, you know, try to own or understand their own experiences, and the way that I do that is through writing songs, and yeah, and that's just an experience that I've had that I have made sense of through writing a song about it. So yeah, that's kind of the way it is.
Before we end up signing off, I have one more question, but before that question, there's another one, so I kind of snuck one in there. And that the first question is, like, you know, we talked a little bit briefly about your band. Tell the world more about them.
So I have a wonderful band here in North America. I've brought my drummer, Jess Elwood, over from Australia, and she's so wonderful to work with and a brilliant player, and she makes me laugh a lot. She makes everyone laugh a lot, actually. And so she's come over from Australia to play with me. I have three wonderful people from LA who are also playing with me. Jenna Prajansky plays bass, and she's a Taco Bell enthusiast and... and has recently introduced me to Oso Oso, so I owe her my my joy, my current van joy for that. Kerry Stewart plays keys. She is like an indie music encyclopedia, has one of the best record collections ever, and is also a connoisseur of whiskey. And Liv Slingerland is playing guitar, and she's one of my... favorite musicians. She can just like play anything, and she's so like passionate about her instrument, and I love that about her. And she's extremely quick and dry and always up for a margarita. And yeah, so I'm very lucky. I have a great crew of people, and I think that we're a great band, you know. Like you can have five people playing music together who aren't a great band.
You really can.
Yeah, but I actually think that the five of us make up a really, really good band, and we definitely have a lot of fun both on and off the stage. So yeah, it's been a really great tour.
Yeah, I'm super keen to see it tonight. Before I let you run here, the last question I had for you is that, and you know, thanks again for being part of this. It's always great.
Of course, man. Anytime.
I mean, we've talked so much about this record you've released. It's amazing that you're touring it again. I mean, I sometimes hesitate asking a question like this so close to a record coming out, because I still feel like you need time to live with it as well. But I do wonder that when you think back to the time in which you made the record, like, and you have such vivid memories working with Catherine and what it was like in Nashville, like, what do you feel you learned from yourself, about yourself, from the experience of making it? Like, something you didn't know about yourself, but, like, within those weeks of making it, you're like, oh, I now know this about myself.
That's a really good question. I think, I think that, like, ultimately, like, I think I'm more flexible than maybe I thought I was, especially creatively. And I think that also, like, I really understand the value of collaboration. Like, the way that Catherine and I were able to collaborate on this record, I think made it far better than what it would have been if we didn't. And like, I think sort of like allowing someone to come into your world and do that is like a really good skill to have. And the thing is, like, the only thing that could hold you back from that is like your intuition. And I'm really lucky that, like, you know, with all the people that I've ever like had help me out on records, like my intuition has served me right. And so I suppose like that's something that like I've learned, is that it doesn't always go the right way, but B, I've been really lucky in that it has for me so far.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, I think that that's kind of what I've taken away from it. And just like the fact that you can make, you know, there are infinite ways to make a record. And like, now that I've made two of them, like in very, very different ways, I'm really excited about the next different way that I'm going to make it. And like, I think that that's really exciting. And yeah, I just feel like I've never felt so inspired to like make music, and I'm super lucky to feel that way. And I'm sure that there will be times in my life where I don't, because that's kind of like what it is to be an artist. You kind of go in and out of wanting to make music or to create or to like hone your craft. But at this stage of where I'm at personally, like, I'm really excited about it. And I think that that's a really good sign. Yeah.
I would say so too. Oh, thanks so much for catching up.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much. Cool, dude.